From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on August 2nd when a new study published in the journal Archives of Sexual Behavior ruined a good narrative. You see, there are all kinds of stereotypes about millennials. They're selfish, they don't have serious work ethics, they're looser with their judgment, they're more likely to cheat on a college exam. In other words, they probably also sleep around a lot, right? Well, no, they really don't. The wide-ranging study found that millennials are waiting longer to have sex, and as a group, millennials are having less sex than Generation X did, who, by the way, had less sex than baby boomers. Did. What's behind this gradual change in behavior? There's not a single answer, but as I was reading a book called The Freshman Survival Guide, I found at least one connection. The book focuses on what incoming college freshmen experience, and one of those things is this notion that everyone's having sex in college, right? As the book notes, perception doesn't always match reality. Yes, there is sex on college campuses, but rarely as much as incoming freshmen expect. And with the knowledge that not everyone is doing it, there's a kind of enlightenment. An enlightenment that says, I have options. The book is now 5 years old, and it's in the hands of thousands of freshmen and their families this week as they're heading back to campuses. The co-author, Nora Bradbury Hale, is a kind of dynamo in the local faith community. She's worked with youth groups, high school, college students, and she's helped lead interfaith conferences in Rochester. I'd asked her to come in to talk about not just sex in college, but also the broader questions about what helps incoming freshmen handle their new world. So she's here, Nora Bradbury Hale, the co-author of The Freshman Survival Guide. Great to see you back here. Thank you for being here.
Good to be back, Evan.
And on the phone with us is Tyler Wheelock. He's an EOP counselor at SUNY Morrisville. Tyler, welcome to you as well. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, Nora, I just kind of want to start with one thing here. This is not a Christian book, though there is an interfaith component that doesn't dominate, it doesn't hit you on the head, doesn't even really lecture at you, but there is a spiritual component here, right?
Right. And, you know, as religion or traditional religious practice becomes a smaller part of our culture, it's still a significant part. And so to integrate spirituality in the book was just an approach that made sense to us.
Sure. But and not to denigrate the universe of advice books, college advice books, life advice books. But sometimes when there is a particularly puritanical bent, it's the idea that, careful, college students, you know, God doesn't want you having sex. And, you know, think of Jesus. And you know, I mean, we're kind of smiling here. And it would be sort of, maybe some people think that would be nice. But I know you think that's not always reality either.
Right. And so one of the things that we tried to do in the book about all different topics, but also about sex and dating, was to deal with the reality of what's happening on campus and what's not happening on campus, so that we've got that credibility to speak with an authenticity to young people about the choices that are in front of them.
Yeah. And, I was thinking of the book when I was reading this study that hit a couple of different news organizations earlier this month that millennials are having less sex. And you're probably not as surprised as some people on this. You work with millennials all the time.
Right, right.
And what did you think when you heard that?
Well, first, I was glad that that was in the news because every generation of old people looks at every generation of young people and says, oh, where's the world going? And I'm pretty hopeful about this generation. You know, they have higher levels of service and engagement. They're better at tolerance. And the idea that they're making different choices, really specific choices about sex, is exciting to me. That I feel like we may be reaching a point in the culture where there's just not the same kind of pressure to be sexually active as there has been for the last few generations.
And we will also in this hour get into some of the things that have changed since this book, the first edition, came out 5 years ago. There's been a lot more focus on sexual assault on campus, mm-hmm. rape, consent, what that means. And we can kind of revisit that as we go throughout the hour. But on the subject that Nora just brought up, I want to ask Nora and Tyler what they think about some of the comments that were made on this program just about a month ago by a former White House speechwriter and a college professor, Kurt Smith. He does not have as optimistic a view about millennials. In fact, this is just about as negative a view as I've heard about this generation. This is what Kurt Smith said about them. We don't have it? Okay, so sorry, Rob. Oh, there we go. Let's listen.
I think that the level of public discourse has worsened, has coarsened, has become more endemic, and has become more insipid. Why has that occurred? Because the culture is that way, which means that the American public collectively and individually, is that way. The American people aren't as bright as they were 20 to 30 years ago.
They don't watch.
I know this is a shock. They don't read as much.
Well, that's true.
The television programming that they watch and that the networks insist that they watch because of options is not as good as it was 20 to 30 years ago. So what we've got is this swampland of idiocy, and we call that culture.
Nora Bradbury-Hale, did you write this book intended for the swampland of idiocy that is the college campuses?
I did not.
I mean,
I
told Kurt, I said, come on, man. What do you think when you hear him say that?
Well, I mean, he does sound a little bit like a curmudgeon. And there's a talk that I give on kids today, and it starts out with three quotes that, you know, sound really similar to what he just said. One of them is from Socrates. One of them is from Plato, and the other's from Peter the Hermit. And so, you know, there's, again, like I just said, that looking back at the time that we were young and saying, oh, well, that was the best time, and now kids today. I mean, yes, yeah, some of the things that he says are true, but I also think that, yes, if you spend your time in the comments section on, any given website, that is exactly the view of humanity that you're going to get. But that's certainly not been my experience of young people. And I suspect that Tyler has a different perspective on it, too.
Yeah. Tyler, what did you think when you were listening to those comments?
You know, that's not the college campuses that I'm at. I've been to several college campuses, and the kids are great. They're more tolerant, like Nora said, of each other. The diversity is, you know, I think there's more diversity than there used to be. And the kids that I've worked with come from all different types of backgrounds. They come from all over the state, all over the globe, and they're great kids. And, I don't see as much of that.
You talk about diversity, Tyler. You think there's less fear of diversity?
I do, and I think that has to do with, you know, social media and just being able to be more global. I have kids from Jamaica, from, you know, New York City, and from, you know, rural New York, and they're all putting in this one program, and I've seen them all look out for one another, help each other, and just be there to support one another, and it's pretty amazing to watch because, you know, growing up, I wasn't exposed to much diversity, and, you know, just throwing these kids together, they turn into a group, and they support one another, and it's pretty awesome to see.
Yeah, and Nora, you just mentioned that you think this generation that's going off to college, maybe this week, right now, is more tolerant. And I probably is fair to say that just about every succeeding generation is a little more tolerant, a little more understanding of difference. I don't know. It sort of feels that way. But I also want to ask you, you know, I know some listeners are thinking, but hey, didn't she write it? She's been working in the religious world for years. She wrote a book with a spiritual perspective. Is tolerance embraced in your world? For anybody who's making an assumption that it would be the other way, what would you say to that?
So I think that, and I'm pretty sure the statistics would bear this out, that the religious world is really similar in its approach to similar to the wider world in its approach to diversity. There are certainly people within the religious community, within my religious tradition, that would be those voices that say, you know, keep the refugees out. I'm really worried about, being a minority in my own country as a white person. And, you know, so those
pray
voices.
Pray away the gay.
Yeah, pray away the gay. Yeah. And so it's not that religious people speak with one voice by any means, and we certainly have those conversations quite heatedly within our own communities, just as much as in the wider culture.
Sure, and I think in this book there's many places where the theme of being open to meeting new people, how to make sure you're not in a bubble, and that's what we can get into as well, not just in terms of making sure that you've got friends who are different than your college roommates' friends, so, you know, you're not overlapping, things like that. But maybe even embracing and being open to people very different than you and seeking out that experience and celebrating that experience, right?
One of the things that I did a lot in my ministry work was to, you know, I was in suburban parishes that were almost completely white, you know, very few minorities, and, you know, and fairly well-to-do. And one of the things that I really felt like was my mission was to drag those kids into the city. You know, we worked at House of Mercy. We worked at the refugee outreach, Mary's Place. And, you know, I love the idea of encouraging a sense of service, and it's certainly part of, you know, who we are as Christians to say, you know, Jesus served, we serve too. But one of the things that I would talk with parents about when they were saying, well, why are you taking all this time to do that kind of stuff, is it's a life skill. It's a life skill to be able to talk with somebody with an accent who looks different than you, to take in somebody else's perspective. And when you get to a college campus as a freshman, you may well be, unless you're coming from a big city, you may well be in the most diverse environment you've ever been in your life. And are you going to cower in your room because everybody's different and you're afraid? Or are you going to lean into that? Are you going to step out and be like, there's so many cool people to meet here and engage with and learn from?
One of my favorite lines in the book was, keep your door open. You know, encourage that sense of openness, because not only are there going to be more people seeing you and you'll see them, but it's symbolic, isn't it?
Absolutely. With my apologies to the campus security folks who say, keep your door locked. you know, as long as you're not alone in your room and it's 2 a.m. and there's, you know, drunken people wandering the halls.
A little different.
But yeah, that idea of an open door, both, you know, physically and metaphorically, that you want to be open to people who are different. And it's so easy to get to a college campus and find the same kinds of people that you hung out with in high school. But don't do it. Don't do it. You know, this is the place where you can stretch yourself and you can have those new encounters. And, you know, like Tyler said, when you can connect with people from a different culture, it can be really incredible, the bonds that you build and the community that you can create.
Tyler, is that open doors thing okay with you?
It's perfectly fine with me. I did it when I was a freshman. We had our doors always open, and, you know, that's how I made friends, just walking up and down the hallway and meeting new students, or, you know, people in the same situation I am, coming to campus and not knowing anybody. So it's a great way to meet people, and, you know, freshmen are a little bit outgoing in that way, that they just pop in.
Yeah, I recall when I went to Ohio University, I went, there was a guy at the high school I went with who I didn't know well, but we were both going to OU, and he said to me, you know, toward the end of senior year of high school, you want a room together. You know, he said, you know, it's always a roll of the dice on who you're going to get with roommates, and at least we sort of know each other, you know. And I thought, that's wise. That's very wise. Mm-hmm. So I said yes, which is a terrible decision. He spent most of the spring quarter, and there were, OU was on quarters, wearing boxer shorts, sitting on the couch, gaining weight every day, watching the History Channel, drinking beer, and not going to class, and somehow got a medical exemption to be out of school. He's doing fine for himself. I have no idea where he is, and he's probably not listening, and I won't mention it by name, but I will just say, and he's probably a lovely guy now, but it was a bad experience, and all because I wanted to protect myself from what I didn't know. And it seems so silly now, Nora, but I sort of wish I had this book telling me, don't do that. Don't be fearful.
Yeah. Well, and the unknown is terrifying. Let's face it. You know, and it's so hard when you're in high school. Your life has been, for the most part, making a sweeping generalization here, but for most high school students, their lives have been the same. They've been going to school with the same people. They've lived in the same town. They know the drill. And to go to this place where everything's different, it's scary. It's scary, but you can do it. You're well prepared.
We are really segregated too. I mean, that's not breaking any news. It's a consistent source of discussion for this program, but it's interesting in this light of the way we are segregated. And when you think about, especially suburban students going to college, resisting this idea to resegregate right when you get to college.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not always as easy to do that, which is a good thing, but you can if you choose to. So I found that really, really valuable. Tyler, before I jump into first generation student stuff, which I know you're heavily involved with there, let me just ask you about that. What kind of segregation do you maybe see occasionally at SUNY Morrisville? And do you see students maybe open to less of that? Or in other words, embracing the idea of not everyone around them looking and sounding like them?
You know, I think the students here embrace that. This is our first week of school and my first year here, and the diversity at Morrisville is, you know, completely different from what I was used to. And, you know, so far everyone just seems to be embracing the differences. It's pretty awesome to see.
Talking to Tyler Wheelock on the phone, he's an EOP counselor at SUNY Morrisville, and in studio with me is Nora Bradbury Hale, the co-author of The Freshman Survival Guide, a book that turns 5 years old this year, and it's available now and easy to find. I mean, no, I didn't pull the clip, but even David Letterman picked this book up when it was. I mean, David Letterman did this 6-minute clip with Paul Schaefer.
That was crazy.
I was going to ask you, to this day, do you know how David Letterman picked it up?
We never found out how it got in his hands, but man, oh man, that was an amazing piece.
He pulls out this book and he kind of starts talking about how, oh, this is nice. Wouldn't this have been nice to have? And then he and Paul start riffing on what advice they'd be giving. Which is
that was not such good advice.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, it was markedly worse, I think, objectively
Very
speaking.
Funny.
But so a lot's happened in the 5 years since the book came out, and here you are in 2016, Nora. How much has changed to the point where you look at this book and think most of it is the same, holds up, or you know, did you feel compelled to kind of go back, revisit certain ideas in the book?
The biggest one was those issues around sex and dating, because so much had happened on college campuses. There was the big Rolling Stone interview about a gang rape on campus, and just a much greater emphasis and more information about consent, a much greater emphasis on men taking responsibility for sexual assault. All those memes that you see on social media about you know, if you've seen the one that sort of reverses all the advice that we give to girls and says, you know, don't wear short skirts and don't get drunk. And, you know, and the meme that I love the best is aimed at men. And it's like, you know, if you can't not rape somebody when you're drinking, don't drink. You know, if you intend to rape somebody, you should tell them at the beginning of the night so they know that you plan to, you know. And I mean, we say it comically, but there's a huge, huge leap in awareness about sexual assault, about consent, and it's important information for everybody. You know, I mean, freshman orientation has always, in my experience anyway, included some information about sex on campus, because all of a sudden those people who were looking over your shoulder and, you know, making sure you were doing what you were supposed to be doing and not doing what you weren't supposed to be doing aren't there. And so there's this sort of false sense of freedom, because there are still consequences, even though your parents aren't there, or your pastor's not there. There's still consequences, and those, you know, the personal consequences are the ones that are the real big deal. So that was one of the biggest changes that we saw. The other thing is, you know, 5-6 years ago when we were, well, 7 years ago we were writing the first edition, like Instagram didn't exist yet. You know, so the social media environment has changed dramatically. What smartphones could do then compared to what they could do now, how many people are on social media. Yeah. I mean, it's just a huge difference. And that was another big change that we made in the book.
And by the way, Tyler, you may be a lot closer to social media in terms of what, I hate to be the curmudgeonly old guy who says like what the kids are doing, but just talking to my wife last night, who is a high school senior portrait photographer. And so she's, you know, she shares some of the images, they want to see previews and whatnot. And I was asking her recently, you know, I'm not seeing as many, much interaction with you and the students who you're photographing on Facebook or on Twitter.
Oh,
and I said, even less on Instagram, because they had all moved to Instagram. And now she says they're all snapping. Yeah. I mean, like the world's on Snapchat, it's like, how do you stay up with it? I mean, do you find that in your job description, Tyler, or do you decide, I'm old enough that I can give up on this and that I can't do this?
You know, like you said, Facebook, Twitter, they're not as popular as Snapchat and even Instagram. But, you know, I draw the line there. I don't really, you know, try to stay away from social media with my students. But that's what they use. And, you know, even as far as email, students don't email anymore. They'd rather just text. So, you know, you're kind of walking those lines, and things are changing.
Well, let me do this for our listeners. I'd love to hear from you this hour on what kind of advice you would share with freshmen who are coming in, because I bet you it's been covered in the Freshman Survival Guide. There's so much here, but I'm curious to know about that. And, you know, are you cynical? We played those comments from former White House speechwriter Kurt Smith, who's, I think, much less sanguine about this generation than Nora is, than Tyler is. How do you feel about millennials? Tim in Pittsford, you don't have to call. I know how you feel. Every time millennials comes up, Tim in Pittsford calls, and he's not a fan. But everybody else, it's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And by the way, there's more information on the book online. Where can people see that, Nora?
They can go to thefreshmansurvivalguide.com, and we have a really cool feature there called the Interactive RA. And so if you have questions and you're a college student or if you're a parent, you can write into, and we have a team of RAs that will give advice.
You have compiled this book through interaction, a lot of interaction with students, with parents, with high school students heading off to college, with college students who are older and wiser, with a lot of freshmen, of course, freshmen at the time. And it's shared and sort of peppered throughout the book. How did you get in touch with Tyler? How'd you meet Tyler?
So Tyler was one of my youth ministry volunteers, and he was working at Fisher, and it was cool to see how good he was at interacting with the young people. And a couple of times we brought students over to Fisher when he was working there. And then, as we were working on the second edition, one of the things that we hadn't put in the first edition was a chapter for first-generation students. And so Tyler, who is awesome, said that he would work with me and go talk to his students. And so they really compiled this list. And I'd love to give him a chance to talk about the conversation that they had. But they came up with this really great list of advice for young people who are the first in their family to go to college.
Yeah, go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, so before I start on the first gen, I just want to go back to the sexual assault and just say that colleges are a lot more aware of that and actually put those types of programming and awareness, such as bystander intervention and everything, into their orientation. So colleges are moving to educate the students more and more about the sexual assault training. But going on the first gen, it's like Nora said, she approached me about writing a chapter or giving some advice in terms of first gens, and I thought, you know, I'd been out of school for 11 years at that point. I'm like, why don't I ask the students that I teach every week about it? And they were so excited, and you know, next thing you know, we had 100 different topics on the board, and you know, just that process was really cool to have them reflect on their own experiences to put it into a top 10 list for others to be more successful in college too.
You're starting to thumb through the book, Nora. You want to grab something there?
Yeah, I just wanted to pull out because that top 10 list was great. And one of the things they said is you're not alone. There are many more first generation students out there too, going through the same process as you are, and you are on equal ground with all other freshmen. Just because your parents didn't go to college doesn't make you inferior. All the other students are still trying to figure out college too. And so that idea that, you know, yeah, this is new for your family, but it's still a new experience for, you know, people whose families have generations into the college experience. And I just loved how encouraging they were and how inspiring they were to other students that are coming up behind them.
Are you starting to hear from people who've picked up the book now and can relate to you what it meant to them, Nora? I mean, it's been 5 years, and I know you don't have to tell us exactly. I mean, I know there have been tens of thousands that have been out there across this country. Are you hearing from readers?
Yes. And that, I mean, for me, that's the most exciting thing, is when I hear a story of somebody who was struggling and then somebody else put the book in their hands. And it, first of all, I think just knowing that everybody struggles, even the people who seem like they've got it all together are, you know, going back to their room at night and crying sometimes, you know, like they've got this, you know, exterior facade that says I'm okay, but everybody is struggling, you know, certainly to different levels, but you know, to know that they're not alone. And I, you know, it's funny now to meet people and then, you know, somehow the book will come up and they'll be like, you wrote that? That helped me so much. And so that to me is just, it's a great big kick.
Excuse me, Kurt Smith said students this age don't read books, Nora.
Well, I'll brag a little bit. We sold 60,000 copies.
Wow.
So, you know, I think they're reading it. And one of the other things I would say about the book is that we wrote it so that you could pick it up and read a few pages at a time and put it down and come back to it whenever. And, you know, there's all different topics in there. And the topics really came from young people themselves. It started out as just a retreat that I did with my high school students at St. Paul's and Webster. We knew, you know, I knew from my experience that kids went off into freshman year and they struggled. And I thought, well, how can we help prevent some of these emergencies of, you know, and I was the one that they were calling on the phone and saying, Nora, I screwed up. You know? When they couldn't call their mom, they would call me, you know, and we'd talk it through. And so that's how it started. It was just a program in my parish where we brought college kids back to talk to high school seniors.
All right. I want to get to Heather and Romulus on the phone after this short break. Cecilia, your email, we're going to share some of your remarks. Mark has a question for our guests. Tyler's got about 10 minutes plus more before he's got to go back to work. He's on the phone with us. Tyler Wheelock is an EOP counselor at SUNY Morrisville, and Nora Bradbury Hale, the co-author of the Freshman Survival Guide and an editor at St. Mary's Press. We continue with this conversation and your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, the subject of pay-to-play in government. We will take a look at the Clinton Foundation and allegations that big donors to the foundation got more access to Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. But we'll also look at the broader question of whether it takes a lot of money to get a seat at the table at all in politics. And if so, what should change? That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Heather and Romulus on the phones first up. Go ahead, Heather.
Hi. Yes, I was an adjunct teacher for a while at TC3, and my son just finished his first year of college at TC3 as well. And I guess I just want to reiterate that he's on academic probation, and he didn't tell me he was kind of flailing. He lived on campus because he didn't want to disappoint me. And so I just want to reiterate to the parents out there to tell your kids not to be afraid to use the resources that are there for tutoring and things like that. When I used to teach, I would say to my students, you can give me a first draft of a paper and I will look it over. And I think only two people took me up on that. And, you know, procrastination is huge, huge for the college kids. But I just, you know, just to watch them struggle when there is help out there, to not be afraid to go out there and ask for help, which is a very hard thing for people to do on a whole.
Well said, Heather, and good luck to you. Thank you for calling in from Romulus and listening to the program on Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM, WEOS. Nora, what do you make of that?
So there's a whole chapter in the book just on procrastination.
Yeah, that's why I was smiling when she said that, because it's so common.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Everybody does it. Everybody does it. But there's also, I wanted to, when we wrote the first edition, I had three chapters titled Go to Class, because I really wanted people to understand just getting your butt in the chair is a really important thing. But the other thing that we talk about is all the help that's available on campus. And, you know, just, you know, as recently as 10 years ago, freshman retention was just not the attention that colleges are paying now to freshman retention is unprecedented. We just haven't seen it like it, you know, not every school, but so many schools have started to pay attention to hanging on to their freshmen because the dropout rates are like 30%. It's crazy, you know, and that's a really expensive mistake to make at age 18 or 19. And, you know, that was one of the other impetus for writing the book in the first place is, you know, I was the person who was at home and the kids who bombed out came back home. And I would see the impact of that failure on them, you know, to have that kind of a burden and the financial burden of a couple semesters at school and the expense of that with nothing to show for it. And so there's so much help available on campus, mental health, writing workshops, labs, go to office hours. Every professor has to have office hours. And that's like to get yourself to the professor's office and just introduce yourself can bump you up a whole letter grade. If you talk to professors, they're so excited when somebody comes to office hours.
Tyler, I want to ask you about your take on this, because I think the book covers procrastination, how common it is, and how time management comes into it, how sleep comes into it, and the value of sleep, which sort of feels, I guess it feels sort of rote in some sense, but we have all been there as college students where you're up till 4, you know, I don't know if I'm going to make my 10 a.m. class. How do you talk to students, Tyler, about the value of understanding that procrastination is normal, but time management and getting to class, go to class?
Well, I think procrastination is part of the learning experience. You know, one of my favorite pieces of the top 10 list that my students wrote was, nobody said it was going to be easy, but it'll be worth it. It's okay to fail, but you have to learn from it. So I think being, you know, if you're procrastinating and you do get that failure mark, you have to learn from that experience, and that you have the resources available at the college. I mean, that's my entire job, is to work with, you know, the students that I've been assigned and make sure that they are successful. You know, I work with them on academics, with their time management. You know, I help them find jobs and figure out their financial aid. So, you know, I think it's on the student to really learn from those experiences and take advantage of those resources that the college campuses have.
Let me also offer another bit of praise for this book, The Freshman Survival Guide, because I think when you hear that this is a book for incoming freshmen, and you wonder, are they actually going to read it? I mean, here's Tom on Twitter saying, Evan, think of millennials as an advanced alien civilization, largely bored by and indifferent to adults. You know, which is a funny and in many ways probably pretty accurate way to think of it. And if an adult waves a book at a millennial saying, here, college student, you must read this, it may not work right away. But if you have developed a relationship with your parents, or if you develop a relationship with your kids, hopefully you get to a point where you can at least have conversations. And I'm not at all saying, you know, Heather wasn't in that spot. I mean, Heather is saying she was in a position where, you know, someone was afraid to sort of reveal how much struggle there was. I can relate to that. I relate my own freshman year being sort of overwhelmed by choices, overwhelmed by all the options there. And you've got to choose to study, to get ready for exams, to go to class. And I think it's helpful to have a relationship and an understanding that you can talk about it, you can seek out help, that doesn't show weakness, that it beats getting to that point where you're not even going to class at all, Nora.
Absolutely. And it's easier than we think to get to that point of discouragement and just saying, oh, I've already screwed up so badly, I'm just going to slide. And, you know, one of the studies that we came across for people looking at freshman retention, Ole Miss did a study, and one of the reasons why we say go to class is that was the biggest indicator of whether or not a student was in trouble. And so they had a system that after a student missed two of the same classes, it would flag them. And there was a whole series of helps that kicked in to make sure that student got the help that they needed. And they were required to do all those things so that they could stay on campus. And I, you know, I had friends who were on academic probation, and some who pulled out of it, and some who crashed and burned. And you know, as I said, it's a big mistake to make that early in life. And so, you know, if you have a young person in your life who's struggling, encourage them to talk about that struggle. It's a huge learning curve going off to college, and when you've always had those people in your life who support you, who keep an eye on you, who say, "Hey, what time did you go to bed last night?" And do you have work that's coming up? And you know, one of the other things that can happen is young people who were pretty good in high school and could get away with maybe not doing all the reading, who could, you know, pull an all-nighter and come out with a decent paper in high school. They get to college and they find that the academic rigor is more of a stretch. And so some of those bad habits of high school, of waiting till the last minute,
yes,
of not doing all the reading, you know, they just come back to bite you. And so, you know, learning how to be a good student is one of those things that you need to learn for semester freshman year.
Yep. I tried to apply the exact same approach I had in high school, which, you know, I remember sitting around the table senior year of high school and someone said, how many hours have you studied? And I said, this year? And they said, like, no, all of high school. And I thought, boy, it's not that much. I mean, I was a last-minute guy. I was a do-it-in-study-hall guy. I got away with it. And I tried to do it in college, and I remember at first semester, 2 B's and 2 C's, 2.5. That was not really, I remember my mother and father were not really down with that, and they shouldn't have been. They shouldn't have been. And that was the wake-up call for me, that standards have to change. But it was easy to feel overwhelmed. And it probably would have been easy to keep going backwards. You know,
absolutely.
So the book's The Freshman Survival Guide. Let me grab another phone call, and this is Kat in Rochester. Go ahead, Kat.
Hi, Evan. Hi, Mom. Hi, Tyler.
Hi.
This is my cat.
Oh, you. Hi, Kat. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say I listen to the show every single day.
Oh, Kat, this is going to get you nowhere. Your mom's already on the show. Go ahead, Kat.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I listen to the show every single day, and I hear, which is not normal for somebody my age, I understand. But
more than you think.
Millennials, I'm telling you.
No, that makes me happy. But Tim in Pittsburgh needs to stop. I have some choice words for Tim in Pittsburgh.
Oh, Tim's already emailed the program today. He said he had a conversation with a millennial today that did not make him very convinced that millennials have a great grasp of grammar in the English language. But Tim's always pessimistic about millennials. Kat, you're taking up for millennials, huh?
Yes, I'm taking up for millennials, and I'll tell you why. We are not only trying to navigate a world that our previous generation has really messed up for us, we're trying to navigate a technological world that the adults in our lives really don't have advice for us on. I mean, there's no guidebook for that. I mean, even for college, there seems to be a little bit of a guidebook. I mean, of course, my mom wrote a whole book about it, which I completely ignored until I got to college, and then I was desperate. But it's really interesting to me, the comments about entitlement, and there were certain entitlements that our previous generations got, like guaranteed at least a job out of high school or college that gave you a living wage. So it's important to me that people know we're not all bad, and even most of us are not bad.
Absolutely. No, I love Tim in Pittsburgh. I don't know him personally, but he and I agree to disagree on this. And Kat, thank you for calling the program, and thanks for listening every day. That's very, very nice. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You want to say anything to Kat, who's off the line now?
Sure. But she's listening because she listens every day. actually, both my girls are huge fans of yours. So,
this is getting awkward.
No, right? Mutual Admiration Society. No, but I'm glad that Kat brought up the point of, you know, there is no guidebook for what's going on in the culture right now. And social media is new to everybody. I mean, yes, this generation of young people grew up on social media, but social media is changing so rapidly. You know, just recently, within the last few weeks, NPR decided to close comments on their website, and it's a decision. While I love that conversation that takes place on the internet, there is a, you know, that terrible example of lowest common denominator. You know, when some of the stuff was happening with Black Lives Matter and the protests and just the racism and the ugliness that appears in those comments section, you know, maybe I do agree with Kurt Smith about some of that, but that's not all millennials either.
Yeah, that's a good point there. And Tyler, I know you got a role. So any final thoughts from you as we continue the discussion on the Freshman Survival Guide and for incoming freshmen?
No, for incoming freshmen, just take advantage of the resources that are there. I mean, so many colleges hire academic advisors, and you know, you have your mental health counselors and health center, and there's just so many resources available, but it's on you as the student to really take advantage of those resources. So do that.
Thanks for taking the time to join the program, Tyler. It's nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you. Thank you,
Tyler,
very much.
Tyler Wheelock, EOP counselor at SUNY Morrisville. And, you know, I go back to what Kat says. I want to expand on one point that she's making as well. She was essentially saying for the older generations who are knocking this college generation, they may be missing a few things. And one thing that came to mind for me was this. When I was in college, there were a lot of incoming freshmen who were undeclared. And it was like, we'll figure it out. Mm. And I know that still happens. It happens a little less because there's more of a loan debt load being carried. There is a little bit more pressure on freshmen to have it figured out to make sure you're not wasting money, mm-hmm. that you're not incurring loan debt for no good reason, that you've got a path to be able to pay it back. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but there's more pressure early on to have it sort of all figured out, especially the less privilege you have coming in. I think there's that. And this generation is going to graduate with a little less of a firm idea that whatever industry they end up in could be a lifetime industry. And that's what is, I think, motivating some of the frustration with primarily white working class, but working class voters who have been sort of looking for a home in this election. They feel a little bit ignored because they graduated maybe a generation ago with this idea that I'm going to graduate. Maybe I'm going to go to college. Maybe I'm not. But whatever I end up doing, I can do that. I can do that for 20, 25, 30 years. I can maybe get a pension. I can retire. I can feed the family and be really solid. There's less of a guarantee for that now. There's more pressure and more consternation in this generation. So it's not all entitlement, easy, no work ethic. I mean, I think in many ways, Nora, it's harder for this generation in that way.
Absolutely. And I think those assumptions that we older people have, that if you just do the right things, then you'll be okay. You know, if you work hard, it's just not true. I mean, I've had, you know, young people who came up through my youth group who got teaching degrees because, you know, you were guaranteed a job. And then they ended up substitute teaching for 10 years before they finally got a teaching position. And these are kids who worked hard, who got good grades, who had several, you know, specializations, and they did everything that they were supposed to do. But the job market just wasn't there for them. And the job market, too, and technology, you know, that's changing so rapidly. The economy has been so up and down. And, you know, we knock millennials for living in their parents' basements. But, you know, they've graduated with $70,000 in debt, $200,000 in debt. And, you know, a starting wage just does not pay what it did a generation ago.
Let me read a couple of emails here. This one comes from Cecilia. She says, Evan, I'm listening in on the current radio show about students keeping an open door and an open mind and to promote diversity. I was wondering if your guest has addressed the impact that international students have on a college campus. My nonprofit, Rochester Global Connections, provides programs and services for international students at local universities to connect with the greater Rochester community in order to promote international understanding and cultural exchange. We're always looking for ways to connect international students with the greater Rochester community, and our programs would be a great way for domestic students to connect with diverse populations and learn from various perspectives. Kind of, it's an extension of what we talked about a little earlier. What do you think, Nora?
Well, first of all, Cecilia, send me an email because I think you and I could have some really great conversations. But you know, to give a short answer, I think that there are lots of opportunities on campus for young people to interact with students who are different. Great places, sort of a first stop for students themselves, is to check in with their RA. We interviewed several RAs for the book, resident assistants, those people that are in your hall and their job is to be there to help you and, yes, keep you safe. But also, they know a lot. They've been on campus and they can connect you with people. They can connect you with events and activities. And, you know, especially for freshmen coming in, hit those activities fairs. I mean, it's easy to grab onto those first few friends you've connected with and say, oh, I'm all set. But don't do that. Keep looking. Keep introducing yourself to new people throughout your first year, obviously through your whole college career. But don't feel like, you know, you're 2 weeks in and you have your friends. You know, keep looking and look for those folks that are different so that you can have those different experiences. There's one young woman who her roommate was from India, and she ended up just connecting with this whole Indian culture that she never would have been exposed to in her hometown. And, you know, she got into the music and the movies and the dance and just knows a whole part of the world that she would have encountered. And also the food. It's always great to meet somebody from a different culture because you get to experience their food.
Absolutely. Mary Beth writes to us on Twitter and says, as a mom of millennials, I'm impressed with their inventiveness, entrepreneurial aspirations, and ingenuity, open minds and hearts. Very nice mm-hmm. comment there. Another emailer just was saying that Mark writes to us and says, when he was in college, he felt overwhelmed and almost dropped out first year, essentially saying that that there was so much in terms of freedom and choices in front of him that he was overwhelmed by it. And so I'm going to use Mark's email to challenge one of the parts of your books.
Okay.
This has been too much of a softball interview. It's time for me to grill you a little. You say in the book, when you get there, incoming freshman, live like, you called it a monk for the first few weeks.
Yes, yeah.
That is so hard to do.
It absolutely is.
Why do you tell incoming freshmen, live like a monk when you first arrive?
So monks take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. Obviously, we don't mean it quite that literally, but, you know, and also we don't mean, you know, cloister yourself away. When I say live like a monk, what I mean is, you know, you might meet the love of your life on the first Friday night of your freshman year. Probably not, though. So that chastity thing of like not hopping into bed with the first person you meet is good advice, because one of the other things that happens, one of the other dynamics that happens is people feel like, oh, nobody knows me here. But the thing is, nobody knows you here yet. And each of those choices that you make is helping define you for the people that are around you. So chastity, poverty. Don't blow all your money. You know, you worked at Seabreeze or McDonald's or, you know, paging at the library to scrape that money together. And there may be people on campus that have more money than you, and they can flash that plastic around in a way that maybe you can't. And so be a little bit of a miser. And then obedience, we're back to go to class.
Get in the habit early on of going to class.
Yeah.
At least that's in part of the routine and the rhythm. So,
On the website, we have a nap calculator. So you can put in how much tuition you pay and whether or not you're living on campus and your dining plan and all that stuff, how much college is, and then divided by the number of hours that you're in class. And you can figure out how much it will cost you to sleep through that class. And it's usually about $200-$300. So
class.
A $300 nap, it's like, oh, well, yeah, maybe I
what
will go to class.
To All right, and what's the website again?
TheFreshmanSurvivalGuide.com.
That's the book we've been talking about. Nora Bradbury Hale is the co-author. The book is available in lots of places now, not the least of which is that website. They have sold tens of thousands of copies, and as you get ready to go back to school, I think we've covered a lot of subjects. So in our last 90 seconds, what haven't we covered? Because you can't do all of the book, but there's so much there. What haven't we covered in this conversation that you think readers have really sort of gravitated towards?
One thing that we haven't talked about is mental health. And that is huge, because the transition is so dramatic, because there's nobody there that knows what normal is for you. So if you're finding, and there's, you know, all kinds of checklists on the internet, but also in the book, if you find yourself not sleeping or sleeping all the time, if you find yourself desperate, and the Jed Foundation has done some great work on this. There's a website called halfofus.com that MTV has worked on, and they've got a lot of great stuff on mental health. The name of that website, Half of Us, comes from the fact that half of young adults have had that experience of feeling suicidal. And so it can be overwhelming. There is help. And again, so much help right nearby. Talk to your roommate, talk to your RA, talk to one of your professors, and they can connect you with the help that you need to stay safe.
Sure. And there's also a section in the book on the different kinds of roommates you have,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you kind of give names to the different, from the sexiler to, you know, a number of different kinds. But I also think, as much as it's good to understand the challenges and sometimes being willing to leave a bad roommate situation, on the flip side, if you're not the one struggling with mental health, but you have a roommate or someone you know is, you know, we all need to be, as we talk about, a more inclusive and tolerant society. And that means being a good roommate and being supportive in that way. And that comes up many times in the book, you know, being sort of open to experience, supportive as well.
Yeah.
And I know you feel that way about roommates and whoever you encounter.
Absolutely. And don't feel like you have to save them, but there are people there to help.
Nora Bradbury Hale's book is The Freshman Survival Guide. It just turned 5 years old, and it kind of took me back in so many ways. In many ways, I thought, well, I'm going to be an alien. It's been so long since I've been in school. There's a lot that's the same. The dynamics are still so much the same. Congratulations on the success of this book. I know a lot of people are connecting with it. And thanks for coming on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
All right, short break. More Connections next.